Ag Bioscience is supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
There's incredibly exciting innovation happening in the technology realm or small startups. And there's a lot happening at bigger scale, even at the policy level. And I think that Bay State's in a really nice spot in the middle to do both, to be able to be a small company that's nimble, that's creative, that's entrepreneurial, but also big enough to deliver solutions at scale.
Welcome to Ag Bioscience, the number one podcast in the world for innovation in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
Welcome back to Ag Bioscience. I'm Dial Ventures, Jared Sutton, this week's guest host of the podcast. The food ingredients market is expected to grow to $97 billion by 2029. That's an annual growth rate of just over 6.5%. Central to that growth is the voice of the consumer seeking options to improve their health and ingredients that contribute to their overall wellness. One company has been innovating in this space for generations, and they join us today. Please welcome Ed Fish, Senior Vice President and General Manager of Varietal Solutions at Bay State Milling, to Ag Bioscience. Ed, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Jared.
Ed, the food ingredients market is undergoing rapid change from consumer demands to regulatory pressures and beyond. Share with us the Bay State Milling perspective on the current state of the market, and particularly for a company that's already been focused on consumer health.
We're always paying attention to what's happening in the market, both from a consumer standpoint, but also from a regulatory standpoint. And we see it mostly as opportunity. I'd be lying if I said there aren't challenges, but we're well prepared and equipped to meet those challenges and opportunities. We've been doing this, for those who are less familiar with Bay State, for over 125 years now. So we like to think that we have a pretty good track record and we know what we're doing. So lots of change and we're up for the challenge.
One of the oldest, one of the largest family-owned milling companies in the U.S. You said 125 years. You celebrated that back in 2024. Man, that's awesome. Congratulations. What does the company's product portfolio entail, and who do you aim to serve through innovation?
We're super proud of our history, and I still think it's an incredibly strong through line, the company culture, and I hope that never changes. But our humble beginnings started here in Boston, where our company is headquartered. And for the better part of 100 years, we were a flour milling company. Over the last decade and a half, we've expanded the business and we've grown into new markets. We produce ancient grains, edible seeds, spices, and a lot of now specialty proprietary ingredients. And our business sort of spans the spectrum from, it sort of starts at the farm gate. We're interacting often directly with farmers. We manage the supply chain all the way up to our facilities where we process raw materials into ingredients, and then we sell those ingredients to our customers. That kind of wider portfolio of products enables us to support our customers, to your earlier question, in this ever-evolving marketplace. And we rely both on the breadth of our portfolio and the breadth of our people. We, you know, our capabilities continue to grow alongside with the ingredients that we provide. And we like to think we have a nice combination of services and ingredients that we can offer our customers so they can meet the changing consumer demands.
125 years, you've been doing something right. That's terrific. You're in the health space, and food is health is clearly a growing topic of discussion and a force of change in ag bioscience innovation. How is Bay State Milling uniquely positioned to lead in this space, both for farmers and for consumers?
That's a loaded question, given all the change in the moment. I'll touch on a few things. I think we've always been focused on being different and being exceptional. And in some ways, that's what we're continuing to focus on. We are increasingly pressing into that health space, but that health space is about being different and being better. And our customers are asking more and more of us. And to that point, you know, what we can offer them, both in terms of services and ingredients, those have expanded. So why Bay State can do that a little bit better is, part of that's our history of being nimble, being entrepreneurial, being willing to take a little bit of risk. Some of that also ties to the unique organizational structure. You know, while we're still a large company, we're still privately held. We can think about things and approach business opportunities differently than some of our publicly traded competitors or startups. We're just different in terms of how we're funded and how we're structured. The other piece is consumer preferences change. We think we're perfect size to sort of meet their needs. And sometimes that's small companies who are growing into bigger businesses. And sometimes that's bigger businesses struggling to kind of pivot what's a really large organization. And we have the kind of the right set of skills and relationships to help them do that. What I tend to see, and I think it's probably relevant for this podcast, is there's often an empty space right in the middle. There's incredibly exciting innovation happening in the technology realm or small startups. And there's a lot happening at bigger scale, even at the policy level. And I think that Bay State's in a really nice spot in the middle to do both, to be able to be a small company that's nimble, that's creative, that's entrepreneurial, but also big enough to deliver solutions at scale. And we have a lot of people that have a ton of experience taking this small novel idea or technology and scaling it up. We're not a genetics company. We're not a breeding company. We're also not a CPG company, but we know how to connect the two. We really know how to connect agriculture to food, and we really know how to take interesting ideas and scale them up to commercial production.
Wow. A uniquely valuable conduit between the two. I love it. So your team has got your customers, right? The food companies, they're at the center of the ingredient development process. Share more about the Rothwell Grain Essential Center and its importance to your product development and customer trust.
That would be one of the services that we talk about a decade ago, a little bit more. We invested in building the Rothwell Grain Essential Center that's located here in Quincy, Massachusetts. And we employ food scientists, culinary experts, and among many responsibilities they have, one is working hand in hand with our customers or potential customers to innovate and problem solve. Sometimes that's how do we optimize for cost? How do we optimize for performance? And other times it's how do we create new, special, different things? And we have a lot of deep knowledge that doesn't just reside with sort of how do we take a few of the different ingredients that we offer and put them into the right combination to produce a product. It also drives further back into the supply chain to, okay, well, what do we need to do from a supply chain standpoint? How do we engage with our growers to make sure that the crop is productive as possible, that our cost structure is appropriate, all the way to kind of like what we would call that formula, the bowl mix, to sort of say, and here's the secret sauce. So a lot of that work happens in our GEC, our Grain Essential Center, and with those R&D and culinary experts. And then it kind of pushes further out into our organization to make sure that we're doing everything we can back into the value chain to make sure that we're delivering and solving for whatever our customer needs are.
How do the customers engage? How do they give you that feedback for what their needs are, their problems, their pain points are? How's that process work?
It's mixed in terms of how it happens. It's also mixed in terms of how transparent and collaborative it is. And just to give you some examples, you know, perhaps we're working with a very large customer that wants to tweak an existing product and a legacy formula, you know, a successful major CPG product line that has been selling huge volumes for decades. They're not really interested often in shaking things up too much, but they might have a particular project around, hey, experiencing something very unique at our production facility and it's slowing things down. Or the crop this year is going to be slightly different than last year. How do we manage that transition without actually having to change the temperature on our ovens? Because that has an enormous impact on our operations. I'd say that kind of engagement tends to be very tactical, a little bit less transparent because there's tons of intellectual property, a lot of know-how that needs to be respected and reside with the owners of that knowledge. And then there's really exciting, collaborative, open innovation where we are sitting side by side, standing side by side at a benchtop saying, hey, how does this dough feel versus this dough? How does this product taste versus this? Okay, let's iterate. I like that, but I don't like the cost. What else can we do? And we're just going back and forth and back and forth. And I would say we're super proud of this. There's a lot of wonderful products in the market that I can consume, that my family can enjoy, that I know that a lot of that innovation, some of those ideas, they happened right here in this building downstairs, working closely with our customers to make that possible.
That's awesome. So identify the problems, understand the problems, roll up the sleeves, get to work, good things come from it. Man, that's awesome. What new products will come to market from this food is health movement? We'll get to that with Ed after the break. Ag Bioscience is supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
A healthy company is a blessing, but a well-insured company is a necessity. That's why Indiana Farm Bureau offers more affordable health plans for eligible members. Whether you have just a handful of employees or a larger enterprise, building a stable business demands employees who are just as strong and healthy. Indiana Farm Bureau can help with health plans that include medical, dental, vision, and Medicare supplement insurance plans. And you can sign up for membership and apply for an Indiana Farm Bureau health plan any time of year. Indiana Farm Bureau understands the cost of healthcare has rapidly become one of the largest expenses for many small businesses. We invite you to compare our health plans to your current coverage. We're confident you could find significant savings. To learn more about the health plan that's right for you, visit infbhealthplans.com and make the switch today.
Ed, you're actively leading the charge and bringing a few new products to market. HealthSense, high-fiber flour, So Naked, high-protein, gluten-free oat. Share more about both ingredients and what they bring to the market that's new and differentiated.
Yeah, I'd love to. And those are great examples of innovation, hopefully, that resonate with a lot of the listeners here. That innovation, it starts at the farm. It actually starts prior to the farm. We like to get what we call privileged access to IP, unique varieties, unique germplasm, because the basis of these types of products is we don't want to process it any different. As a company, generally speaking, we do very benign processing. So we produce ingredients by cleaning, by milling, by crushing. We're not doing heavy chemical extraction, things like that. So the idea is, let's start with a better raw material. Let's simply express what's intrinsic in a plant. So we like to get privileged access to better plants. And generally, everything we do is at scale. We have aspirations to change the food system. And so we're going after big ingredient categories. HealthSense, high fiber wheat flour, is a great example of that. We have a partnership that has given us exclusive access to what's called high amylose wheat. And we built that high amylose wheat supply chain here in North America. We mill that high amylose wheat into a flour that has 10 times more fiber than your traditional white refined flour. And we branded it HealthSense. And so if you can believe it, it's sort of like you can have your cake and eat it too. It's a white flour that makes all the products we've come to love as a society, but has way more fiber in it than even whole wheat. And the way that's possible is, and it took a lot of hard work and many years of investment and learning, it started out with a unique plant. And this unique variety of wheat is grown here in the United States. And we're super proud of working with local domestic farmers to grow this wheat across 8 different states who bring it into our mills. We convert that into flour and we sell it to companies. And that allows our companies to do one of two things. It allows them to renovate or reformulate existing products. Think wheat flour, think big categories like crackers, breads, pastas, and provide the consumers with the same products that they're familiar with that taste great, that are affordable, that we're used to consuming with just this sort of stealth health element. And we've stitched that together over the years. And the most complex piece to solve in the early years was the IP supply chain. You know, the wheat system has been designed for safety and efficiency. And so what it's not designed for is, let's grow a little bit of wheat over here that's special and keep it segregated. You know, everything is done at scale. So we've scaled it successfully, but over the years, while we were getting there, it was challenging to solve for, hey, how do we do something special and different than a system that's designed for efficiency, speed, consistency, those sorts of things. And I'm happy to talk more about that, but let me just jump really quickly to So Naked Oats, which is same concept. Let's start with a better version or a unique version of oats. So Naked Oats are a hullus variety that have 40% more protein than your traditional oats. And that is the value proposition. One, it has 40% more protein. Two, because it's hullus, it has a 50% lower carbon footprint. We've been able to quantify that by looking at it side by side with oats growing similar geography. So those oats require more energy to expel the hull and then more energy to transport that hull to a secondary market. And then the last piece is it's what we call purity protocol gluten-free. So we work closely with our farmers to make sure that they're abiding by a crop rotation that doesn't have gluten-containing crops over a certain amount of years. And then we transport it certain ways. We process in facilities to guarantee extremely tight spec on gluten levels.
Man, that's awesome. I can tell you right now, an N of one. My wife's getting super excited listening to this. So tell me about the feedback from food companies and farmers alike. What are you hearing from folks on both sides of the value chain?
Let's start with the farmers. I mean, I think none of the food system exists without them. And so we really need their partnership. We've had great experience with the farmers. I think, like anyone, I think many of them were either skeptical or excited about it, but just wanting to dip their toe in the water because new and different can sometimes be scarier or represent risk. But over time, I think what the farmers, at least the farmers that we work with, what they've come to understand and appreciate is, hey, let's take wheat, for example. I can either be completely subject to the vagaries of the markets, geopolitical tensions, weather events, or I can push some of my acres to a specialty crop like this where I'm guaranteed some revenue. I can think about sort of hedging my commodity wheat with specialty wheat. And I think they appreciate that. This wheat requires more care, requires slightly different approaches, but I'll let them figure that out. And they've been excited. The other thing I would say on the farmer side that's really important is just like, and we're about to talk about this in a second, everyone likes to say like consumers want to know where their food comes from. My experience is a lot of the growers that we're working with, especially as we go from one generation to another, they're really excited to know where their crops are going. And these specialty products are ending up in ingredients and in food products that they want to consume. And they can feel really proud of the fact that they grew something that is better for you. So whether it's a high protein oatmeal or a high fiber loaf of bread, tortilla, mac and cheese, pasta, what have you, they can feel really excited to be able to draw that through line from like, I grew this crop all the way to here's the product I'm buying on the store shelf and serving my family at the dinner table. And that's great. In terms of the consumer response, I would say similar, and maybe not consumer, but the food manufacturer response is they're just experiencing a ton of growth in a world where we have different factors that influence consumer behavior. One thing that has been consistent is at least a portion of the population is seeking better for you products. Sometimes because of novelty, they're interested. Sometimes because they need a certain health attribute that they're seeking out. Sometimes because of political narratives or social media or what have you. And so there are pockets of the population that are eating different, consuming different. And the products that our customers are making are taking advantage of that and experiencing a ton of growth. And growth is king. So we're happy to be able to help them with that.
As you examine the growing challenges that farmers face on their operations, as you mentioned, think about the market pressures, the regulatory uncertainty, climate volatility, and so much more. How do you see premium products like these playing a role in their business?
I thought you might ask that question. And first thing I would say is like, we don't view these as premium products. We view them as different. They would be premium if they cost more and didn't deliver more value. But in these cases, we think the value that we are delivering is appropriately priced. And therefore, we like to think of them as differentiated products. So for the farmers, a lot of it's what I talked about. Having certainty of offtake creates value for them. Having different sort of economic drivers in terms of what sort of contracting and pricing is built into these unique crops, I think is attractive to some growers. Again, right, appreciating the fact that most of our growers, they have a variety of different crops grown across a large number of acres. And so this is one of multiple different activities that they're doing on their farm. And so they're able to sort of, within their own portfolio of crops, within their own portfolio of farming activities, create some level of diversity. And so I think they've been happy to grow these products in a time of uncertainty. The other piece I would say is, and this is a little harder to see, but in general, the huge amount of capital that's been invested into the agricultural system over decades has been really effective. We have the most efficient agricultural system. We can yield greater volumes. We can convert those volumes into ingredients more efficiently than ever. We can convert ingredients into food more efficiently than ever. But what that capital has been focused on is, again, that efficiency and less about differentiation. And I think What's happened is in some crops and some ingredients is there remains deficiencies, opportunities to be addressed. Instead of some of that opportunity being addressed by making the crop different, we've given birth to specialty ingredients. So when you pick up a packaged food ingredient in the grocery store and you're saying, hey, what are all these ingredients? Many of those ingredients are addressing deficiencies in your basic staple ingredients. And so I say that all because there are now more participants in the value chain. There are more companies that are ultimately ending up in a finished good that you're consuming. The more participants there are, the more the value gets distributed. And so we have a highly commoditized system with lots of participants, which just means participants get marginalized. And unfortunately, one of the most important participants, if not the most important participant, the farmer, gets marginalized and commoditized. And so I think these specialty crops, I'm not naive. I know they won't ultimately represent all of the acres in the country, but it's an opportunity to grow something that's uniquely valuable and capture a disproportionate part of that value without sort of having it shared with other participants in the value chain.
You had me at certainty and offtake. Okay, Ed, so you've spent some time in corporate strategy, you've been in private equity. Now, of course, you've been nearly a decade in food. What do you see ahead for the industry? How are the winners of the future innovating today?
It's a super exciting time. It's been that way for a while. I would say all the winners and losers, it hasn't all shaken out yet. I think there's probably four areas where we'll see a ton of change. I don't assume any of this will be earth-shattering to any of the audience, but one is hardware. Like, I think we're going to see huge advancements in the equipment that we're using at the farm gate, transportation, food processing. We're going to see massive transformations in those different segments, led by robotics probably. And that's happening as we speak. The second piece, I would say software, whether it's AI or just software-enabled tools, and this will power some of those hardware advancements, robotics. Like, there will continue to be proliferation of technology in that hardware. Machines will be smarter, tools will be faster, decision-making will be better, and the concept of precision agriculture, which I think is kind of like old jargon at this point, will be further enabled. Then I think probably the newer, biggest piece is the life sciences and the biology piece. And by the way, these categories are not just explicitly, it doesn't pertain only to agriculture and food. You could apply the same lens to most industries, but I think we're going to see transformational kind of impact in the next few years, and the rate of change will only accelerate. I'm fortunate to be here in just outside of Boston, where we have a massive life sciences industry. But those hubs across the country, across the world, they're pushing out really exciting new ideas, technologies, and ultimately we'll see whether consumer acceptance is what it needs to be. But I think that's kind of the third big lever. And then the final piece is, of course, like the people who are eating the food. Food's incredibly personal. We ingest it in our bodies. It's how we gather as family, as friends, communities. It's a hot button topic. People have very strong, emotionally fueled views about it. But one thing for sure is it's going to change. And, you know, that's going to have the ripple effects through the entire value chain. What I would say on winners and losers across those different segments is I've seen a lot of exciting tech in food and ag fail already. Incredible, actually, to see how much money has been poured into both good ideas and, by the way, lots of bad ideas that haven't been successful. To me, the winners are going to be the companies that haven't lost sight of the fact that it's still a relationship business. It's all about people. Like, it doesn't matter how much better your widget is than the next person, you still got to be able to form a relationship with someone who needs to take risk, who's willing to listen, and all those sorts of things. So I think some of the companies that are either physically positioned to succeed, meaning they're located close to growers, employ the right set of people who have real agricultural experience and relationships, or at the very least are kind of aware of the importance of this, are going to be the ones who are most successful.
And that's brilliant. So hardware, software, healthcare. We have a big healthcare hub here in Indiana as well, by the way. The consumer connectivity with food, all of this culminating for an exciting time in innovation in ag bioscience. So what's ahead for Bay State Milling, Ed?
Future's bright. I think a lot of what we touched on, I would remind people that the last 15 years has been, it's always a unique period of time, at least from my experience, it's been unique with respects to food. We came out of a pretty significant recession in 08. People were making real changes to how they were consuming, whether clothing or food or otherwise. And there was like an explosion coming out of 08, right? We bounced back more vigorously than ever. And that for sure fueled what was already an interest in health. And so specific to Bell at Bay State, specific to a lot of the space where I spend my time, which is focused on health and wellness, I'm just going to try and kind of walk you through what's ahead. So we had that. That added some fuel to the fire. And then quite recently, we had COVID. And I think that's what kind of transitioned us from simply thinking about health to health and wellness. You know, what simply was sort of more diet-related seeking by the consumer ended up being more preventative seeking behavior by the consumer, right? Now they were thinking about, how do I invest in my overall wellness? How do I build my immunity? What's this microbiome? How does this protect me? And so coming out of COVID, where again, similar to 2008, people were excited to be able to live life the way they were before. And from a kind of a financial standpoint, the economy started to thrive. And so we saw like a real groundswell in health and wellness with an emphasis on wellness. And then I'd say most recently, the GLP-1 phenomenon has been, you know, and I would say that's still in early stages, very well documented. The market is huge and the impact's going to be big. These pharmaceutical companies, they're going to continue to make the drugs more effective. The cost of those drugs are going to go down and any social stigma is going to continue to melt away. And so I think it's going to have a real impact on food. The impact it's going to have on food is not just people are going to eat less. I think overall awareness has grown. People are familiar with terminologies like satiety. They're seeking out foods that make them feel full for longer periods of time. Those on the GLP-1 drugs might be seeking out different things in their food, like, hey, I'm eating less. I need to be thoughtful about, am I getting enough protein? Am I getting enough fiber? And so they're more intentional about seeking out nutrient-dense foods. And so I would say going all the way back to the 08 crisis, fueling interest in health, then COVID fueling additional interest in wellness, and now GLP-1s kind of even broadening awareness. And then finally, I would layer on the current administration. Make no mistake about it. There is a very strong view of the administration, which I think is listening closely to the general public, that people want change in the food system. And they're focusing on ultra-processed foods, which I think is potentially going to create some noise around what's ultra-processed versus simply processed. And in general, people are going to be seeking out, whether the administration kind of dictates it or not, people are interested in foods that are cleaner, right? And so what does that all mean for Bay State? I think we're really well positioned in the here and now to help our customers produce foods that are familiar, that are clean, and that are nutrient dense. And they're able to do that by using ingredients like So Naked Oats, which are packed with protein, or HealthSense High Fiber Wheat Flour, which is packed with fiber, but ultimately also making sure that the customers get a product that tastes good, that's affordable, and that's safe. You know, those things are never going to change. So I think the near-term future is really bright. And then we're off to the races on our strategy about what's next and continuing to invest in being different and being special.
Wow, the future is bright. He's Ed Fish. He's the Senior Vice President and General Manager of Varietal Solutions, Bay State Milling. Thank you so much for joining us on Ag Bioscience.
Thanks, Jared. Really appreciate it.
And thank you for joining us. You can watch or listen to episodes on Ag Bioscience by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. And while there, don't forget to leave us a review. On behalf of the Agrinovus team, I'm Jared Sutton. Thanks for listening and watching. We look forward to seeing you real soon.
Ag Bioscience is a podcast by Agrinovus Indiana, produced by Kayla Chittister and Fabian Rodriguez. Edited by Mike Fisher. Photography and design by Kaylee Verstee. Video by Darren Cooper and 1898 Creative. If you like today's episode, subscribe, rate, and review so we can bring you more conversations just like this. Get all episodes of Ag Bioscience at agrinovusindiana.com.